The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larson, Judge Cochran, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Elise Larson presiding.
Good morning, everyone. You may be seated. Good morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. Today is December 21st, 2023. Today's argument is being live streamed, and we are also making an audio recording. The audio recording of today's hearing will be available within 24 hours on the court's website. A reminder to the parties that no other recordings are permitted without the express permission of the Court of Appeals. Today we have five cases on our calendar. Three we will hear oral arguments this morning, and two have been submitted for non-oral conference. With that, I will call our first case. The first case on our agenda this morning is In Re the Welfare of the Child of M.A.C., case number A231149. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning.
As I'm sure each of you know, you will each be giving 15 minutes this morning for your arguments, and appellants, you'll be given 5 minutes for rebuttal. Before beginning your argument, if you would each identify yourself for the audio record and your clients as well. With that, appellant, if you are ready, you can approach the podium. Oh, I was going to say you can adjust the podium, too. I apologize for.
Thank you.
Yeah. Are you ready?
I am.
All right.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Brooke Beskow-Warg, and I represent appellant mother M.A.C. in this appeal of the termination of her parental rights and the order denying her post-trial motion. Parents are presumed fit under the law. It is the department's burden at the termination of parental rights trial to overcome that presumption and prove by clear and convincing evidence three elements: a statutory ground for termination, that the department made reasonable efforts to rehabilitate the parent and reunify the family, and that the termination is in the child's best interests. If any one of these three elements is not proved by clear and convincing evidence, the termination does not stand. In this appeal, mother is contesting all elements of the termination. Specifically, mother argues that the department failed to make reasonable efforts to rehabilitate her and reunify her with her child because it failed to provide any meaningful resources and services to address the primary issue in the case, which was her chemical dependency.
Counsel, I think the crux of this case comes to the respondent's argument is that because your client did not do any of the testing, that the county is not aware of her chemical dependency or the nature of her chemical dependency until they have any kind of testing. And so any lack of programming was the direct result of your client's conduct. How do you respond to that argument?
Sure. And Your Honor is absolutely right. That is respondent's argument. I would argue first that chemical testing is not a prerequisite to getting a chemical dependency evaluation. As demonstrated by the record, mother was able to get a chemical dependency evaluation on her own, despite the fact that there was no chemical testing. The department...
Do you have any cases where we have, or where a county has ordered chemical dependency, an assessment without any testing prior to having any testing that they've ordered the assessment? Sorry, I want to make...
Any case law that
I'm
aware of?
Yeah, are there...
I am not aware of any case law on point on that particular issue. Of course, it is problematic here because the county is not, while they oversee the case and they, you know, make referrals for these evaluations, they are not the expert. They are not actually conducting the evaluation. One other notable piece of this is that had the county wanted a, as they say, a more reliable assessment of mothers' chemical dependency, one where they had input and collateral and provided information to the assessor that would, in theory, make it more reliable. They could have made a referral to do that, but they didn't. And this is despite the fact that throughout the case, the county believed that mother was using. While there weren't tests to show that, there is other evidence in the record that the county nonetheless believed the entire time that mother was using. It is shown by the fact that the child was removed after being in mother's custody under protective supervision for a large amount of time because mother did not submit to that chemical testing. It is shown by the fact that the county routinely considers missed tests to be positive. It's also shown by the fact that they never allowed mother to have unsupervised contact with the child. There's even testimony at the trial that they believe that mother was using, that there was evidence from other family members that she was using during this time. And so all of that could have been information that could have been helpful to an assessor, but the county never made a referral for that assessment. The
Counsel.
Case.
No, go ahead.
Accepting your position that the county was aware of her chemical use issues, I think the record does reflect that she had a chemical assessment by Nystrom and Associates.
That's correct.
And in that assessment, I think, concluded or found that she was in remission and didn't recommend any further treatment. Mm-hmm. So if the county had ordered an assessment on its as part of its services that it had provided, how would we be in a different place now? How was mother prejudiced, in your view, by her getting her own assessment rather than the county referring her to a specific assessor?
Well, by the county's own argument, had they been able to provide that collateral and input into the assessment, which is pretty routine in these cases, they do often provide that collateral, then the recommendations may have been different, and they may have been in a position where they needed to be referring her to treatment, finding her a treatment option, or otherwise assisting her in some way with her chemical dependency. The problem here is that the county believed the entire time that mother was using. They kept the child out of her care the entire time because they believed she was using, and the court ultimately terminated her parental rights because it believed that she was using. Yet despite that, there was nothing more than chemical testing offered to mother. There was not a referral made by the county. The assessment that she did complete, she did on her own. She sought that out on her own, not by a referral of the county. There was otherwise no supportive services offered to mother to help her with that chemical dependency issue for which her rights were ultimately terminated.
Counselor, that, can I inquire about that point? Isn't it, what I read from the findings, the impression I get from the judge's findings, at least as it relates to that point you're making, is that, for instance, failing testing shows simply not cooperating with human services follow the plan, which includes, of course, abstaining and so forth. And then I'm in finding 38, the judge about halfway through says, Ms. Carlson has not engaged in any supportive services to decrease the risk of continued relapse. Doesn't that suggest that the point being is that because she's not cooperating, because she's not testing, there's not an ability, she's not doing her share to be able to work with the human services in order to get into a treatment program to get the assessment necessary to do that?
Sure, and it does appear that the court did make the finding, as Your Honor noted. However, if that is the position of the county, that no matter what they would have done, it wouldn't have mattered. No matter what they would have offered mother, she wouldn't have done it. No matter if they had provided her treatment services or not, it wouldn't matter. Then the county needs to bring that to the court for a finding of futility. That is the only way that they are relieved from providing reasonable efforts to a parent in a case. Otherwise, they are required under law to continue to make reasonable efforts to alleviate, remediate the conditions that brought the case into court. In this case, the county never brought a motion to the court saying, hey, no matter what we do, it's not going to matter. No matter what efforts we provide, it's not going to matter. And so this is futile. Will you relieve us of reasonable efforts? They didn't do that.
Even if not relieved, isn't it part of the definition of reasonable services is how the parent is cooperating with them such that the services become reasonable because you're working together? But it seems like we have plenty of cases that describe the fact that if a parent's just not cooperating at all, then whatever efforts that they did do were reasonable given the fact there's a non-cooperation.
Under the law, the county has the obligation of providing reasonable efforts. They need to provide those efforts to the parent until there is a finding by the district court that they no longer need to provide those efforts. The only way to do that is to relieve them through a motion to find that those efforts are futile and they no longer need to provide those.
But would you agree the concept, though, as I understand in the law, part of whether it's reasonable does equate to what role the parent is cooperating with the agency or the social worker to do the things that the plan sets out that she needs to do? And hence, you look at that, and that's kind of why I was asking about this finding, and there's others as well, but that's how I look at the test refusal is ties into what cooperation she's doing, which then leads to whether the services were reasonable, the efforts of the agency.
I think what this case comes down to, Your Honor, is that the county just needed to do a little bit more, and they didn't. They could have provided a referral to another chemical dependency evaluator. It's also concerning that they knew about this chemical dependency evaluation that mother did, and they didn't get the results, not entirely at their own fault, for many months. And even though the caseworker testified at trial that those assessments are invalid after 90 days, they didn't get that assessment until 8 months later. Regardless, they would have needed a new one, one where they could provide collateral, potentially make that more valuable in determining what services mother actually needed, but they didn't do it. That was an absolute minimum that they needed to do, and they failed to do that. That is not reasonable efforts under the circumstances to assist a parent in overcoming the issues that brought the case into court.
So I think maybe to sharpen Judge Sleater's question a little bit, I think that the real dispute on this issue is whether, because I think the county's position is the way reasonable efforts work in this type of cases, they can order testing. If there's participation in the testing, then they can order an assessment. If the assessment shows that they need additional services, then they would order more services. And I think the argument that you are making is, regardless of participation in testing, the county has an obligation to order an assessment when the reason for the removal is concern that the parent is doing, is suffering from chemical dependency.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so what I've been trying to tease out is whether there is any case law to support the county's position that testing, and I haven't been able to find any, that testing is a prerequisite to ordering an assessment.
And, Your Honor, I don't believe there is any case law saying as much. I was unable to find anything of that nature as well. One thing I would note is by the terms of the case plan itself, it said not upon a positive test. That was one triggering event that could result in a chemical dependency evaluation. But it wasn't just a positive chemical test. By its own terms, the case plan also said any indication of use. The county, by its own admission, had concerns the entire time that mother was using. They kept the child out of her home. They kept her with supervised visits. They routinely consider missed UAs as positive. There were indications by the county's own case plan and the terms of that, that there was use happening. That should have triggered a chemical dependency evaluation, but in this case, the county did not submit a referral for a chemical dependency evaluation. and that could have guided the case in a different direction. That was the county's failure to make reasonable efforts. Your Honor, unless there are any other questions on the reasonable efforts piece, and certainly I'm happy to answer those, but I would also like to at least briefly here address the statutory grounds. The court did find that there were three statutory grounds met here, that the parent neglected her parent-child duties, that she's palpably unfit, and that she failed to correct the conditions leading to the out-of-home placement. One thing that I would note is that these findings that the statutory grounds were met is both contrary to law, as noted, especially for the palpably unfit basis and the others because there was a lack of reasonable efforts and also simply not supported by the record. There needs to be a causal connection between mother's chemical dependency and the effect on the child in these cases. The order is basically devoid of findings that there is a causal connection between mother's chemical use and any effect on the child. There are minimal findings that mother missed two appointments for medical, an ear tube procedure for her child, and that there was a delay in the child receiving early intervention services because mother failed to sign the appropriate paperwork and attend a meeting, but that certainly does not rise to the level of a termination of parental rights. Are those things concerning? Of course, but it does not rise to the level of a termination of parental rights. Otherwise, all we have are conclusory findings that this affects the parent and child relationship without evidence in the record or findings supporting those conclusory assertions. I see my time is just about over, so I'm happy to answer additional questions on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may approach the bench and you will have 15 minutes.
Good morning, to your honors and counsel, and may it please the court. My name is Britta Nicholson from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, and I am appearing this morning on behalf of the respondent in this case, who is the Hennepin County Human Services and Public Health Department, who I will be referring to as the department throughout argument this morning. I would like to begin by addressing an argument that appellant raised in her reply brief and also this morning on oral argument. The argument that the department's decision not to make a referral for a Rule 25 assessment was tantamount to the department making a futility finding, which only the court can make. However, a futility finding is a very specific legal finding under Minnesota Statute 260.012 that only occurs when the department completely ceases all reasonable efforts, stops providing a case plan altogether, and doesn't offer any services at all. And that is not what happened in this case. The department offered a myriad of services throughout the case, including UAs, the sweat patch, a parenting assessment, an arms worker, a mental health assessment, supervised visitation, transportation assistance, monetary assistance for her phone, etc. So the department was providing reasonable efforts throughout the case and never made its own independent futility finding. By arguing otherwise, the appellant is overextending the department's decision not to make a referral for a Rule 25 assessment. And even if the court were to give credence to appellant's argument that only the court can decide when specific referrals and specific services are futile, the court approved of the department's course in this case. The case plan that was approved and ordered by the court at the time of the CHIPS adjudication did not expressly require an immediate Rule 25 assessment. It said that a Rule 25 would only be required if there were positive test results or some other affirmative indication of appellant's use. Thus,
would you agree that the record reflects that the county believed that mother was using chemical substances and had a concern about that?
The department definitely had suspicions and concerns about that. However, the department did not have any concrete evidence that it could present to a chemical health assessor to say, we have documentation, we have proof that she is currently using. In order to make a referral to diagnose somebody as currently chemically dependent, and make a referral for chemical dependency services, the assessor needs some type of evidence that the parent has a current problem, not that they have a problem that's in remission, which was the result of that August 2022 assessment, but something that is currently actively a problem. So they would need some type of admission or acknowledgement from the parent. That does happen regularly where the parent isn't providing UAs, but they admit to the assessor that they've used recently, and then they can be diagnosed and referred for treatment. However, in this case, all of appellant's actions completely frustrated the ability for any assessor to recommend any services for her because she was completely denying and minimizing her current use and then also refusing to provide any documentation that would speak otherwise to demonstrate that either she is currently sober and therefore doesn't need treatment or that she is in fact currently using, therefore has a current issue that requires treatment. So it was through her own...
Do the missed UAs... could that be evidence of chemical use that could support a referral?
The department does consider missed UAs presumed positive. However, a chemical health assessor, they would not be able to diagnose somebody as chemically dependent just by the fact that they are missing and not providing UAs. The presumed positive is a standard that applies to the department, not to chemical dependency assessors.
How would a positive test versus a presumed positive test influence the Rule 25 assessment?
So Rule 25 assessments are based on what drug is the parent using, how recently have they used, what is their withdrawal potential, how often are they using, how much are they using at a time. That is what will determine what services are tailored and appropriate for the parent, because there are a wide variety of chemical dependency options. There's outpatient, there's inpatient, there's intensive outpatient with lodging. There's a wide variety of chemical dependency treatment that is available to parents, and the recommendation is based on specific evidence regarding the parent's current use, either, again, them admitting to it or the department being able to provide documentation of here are all of the UAs, here's what the levels are in the UAs, here are the dates of the UAs, what substances they're using, and then that is the springboard for the chemical dependency assessor to make a fully informed recommendation. But if this client would have sat down with the chemical dependency assessor, said, I haven't been using in 2 years, and then they call the department and the department says, well, we have a hunch that she's using, but we don't have any documentation of use, that still would not have resulted in a referral for chemical dependency treatment.
It seems like, to follow up with that, it becomes a catch-22 for a parent because, if I understood what you said, the reason a Rule 25 assessment was not recommended is she appeared to be, at least as of that moment, not chemically dependent or was in remission, I think is the phrase you use. And yet it looks like the whole basis, the primary basis of the entire child protection proceeding, and now looking at the court's order, such as her failure to remedy her chronic methamphetamine use negatively impacts her ability to parent her child. From my experience in the district court, it seems like the very first thing in the plan in this sort of scenario would have been a chemical assessment. Now, she might deny, and it might not qualify for treatment, but now you've got that in the record. That might then be a denial, which then ties in with refusing to test. But if you're ultimately going to terminate the rights, wouldn't you, at a minimum, be required to be reasonable to address the very issue that the court seems to find is the reason she can't parent on the statutory basis, her chronic chemical use, and yet she's never been afforded or referred to a treatment or an assessment to get a treatment for that chronic use?
Well, as the case law states, a case plan that is approved and ordered by the court is presumptively reasonable. And in this case, the court's ordered case plan was that a Rule 25 was only to be required if there were positive UAs or an affirmative indication of use. And that, again, that approach
was... Is it affirmative or any?
It was any indication of use, but again, I don't think a lack of UAs, it would be sufficient to indicate use to a chemical health assessor.
I mean, I guess my concern with the case is it's pretty clear that the county must have had some kind of indication of use. If you're removing the child from the home, the mother is missing all of her tests and they're presumed positive, and then you're not allowing unsupervised visits with the child. It seems that there must have been some indication that she was using drugs in order for those to have been the steps that the county was taking to protect the children.
The department was concerned that she was using, absolutely. But again, the distinction here is not between, it's between the department's hunches and concerns versus what would actually be practically likely to result in a recommendation for chemical dependency treatment.
Just so follow counsel, up. I was just going to say, you can't remove a child from a home on a hunch. So what was the basis for removing the child from the home?
So the disposition that was ordered initially was protective supervision. And in order for a child to remain with a parent, they need to comply with the conditions of protective supervision. And those conditions were substance use testing. And there was testimony at the removal hearing, and then the social worker explained, we are unable to verify whether the child is safe and in a sober home due to the lack of testing, and then due to the parent, the appellant in this case, being uncooperative with letting the social worker into the home. The social worker explained that given the young age of the child, she's not able to express what's going on in the home. So due to all of those safety concerns, and then on top of that, her legal failure to comply with the conditions of protective supervision, that was what necessitated the removal at that time.
So there was no actual evidence of use?
At that time, no. And another point I wanted to make was, as we are here on appeal, appellant has the burden to demonstrate prejudice from what happened in the case. The outcome of the case would have been different if the department would have referred her for a second Rule 25 assessment. However, appellant has not and cannot demonstrate that in this case. First and foremost, if the department had made the referral, the appellant would have had to attend the assessment. If you look at her complete, utter lack of case plan compliance in this case, it is highly unlikely she would have attended that assessment. For example, just look at the referral the department made for the combined mental health and parenting assessment, where the assessor couldn't get in touch with her for weeks, had to contact the department and say, I'm about to close the referral. So the department had to meet with the mother and beg her to contact intake. She finally did. She scheduled the assessment, and then she was a no-show to that assessment. So first and foremost, there's no evidence to support that she would have done it based on a referral from the department. Second, as I've already touched on, there is no reason to think that with no positive UAs and appellant continually denying her use, that any assessor would have been able to say she is currently chemically dependent and needs treatment based on the record
we have. But yet that's precisely the basis for terminating her parental rights. I mean,
well, she did provide a methamphetamine positive UA 3.5 weeks before trial.
Well, okay, but you're not supposed to terminate parental rights based on one positive test.
But it demonstrates that she was continuing to use, and due to her own refusal, if she would have dropped that methamphetamine positive UA by cooperating with drug testing in the very beginning of the case, the department would have been able to make a prompt referral for a Rule 25 saying, look, I have in my hand evidence that she is currently using, and then she could have been referred for appropriate treatment. But it was by her own choices, despite the department making referrals for UAs and patches, offering to drive her themselves, giving her bus cards, gas money, and phone minutes, she rebuffed all of those efforts for 26 months.
But the finding is that she has, I think, chronic...
Yes, that is based on her extremely extensive history of using methamphetamine back to the early 2000s during, I believe, at least three of her pregnancies with her other children.
So and aren't you trying to have it both ways, though, by, you know, arguing that her methamphetamine use supports the termination of her parental rights, but there wasn't sufficient evidence of methamphetamine use to support a referral, so that's why she didn't get the referral. Help me understand how those two positions are consistent.
Yes, so basically the department's concern that she was using was based on her extensive history and not only prenatal exposure of other children, but the child in this case who was born with drugs in her system. And then her refusal to document her sobriety gave the department to have reasonable concern that she was continuing to use. And then she provided the methamphetamine positive UA 3.5 weeks before trial after intentionally obstructing any ability to get any treatment through her minimization and refusal to submit testing. So all of that led to the very reasonable concern that based on her history, her avoidance and denial during the case, her denial and minimization during her testimony, and then her positive UA, that chemical dependency still was a serious and severe problem for this parent. But again, her actions frustrated.
That same thought, though, isn't it, again, based on your explanation, that's the very first time that your hunch has now been confirmed, but it's also the very first time that she then qualifies pursuant to the plan to be referred to an assessment. Wouldn't the reasonable effort included, A, we're going to postpone the trial because, B, we're going to refer her to an assessment, and if your suggestion hunch your other hunch is correct, and there's a basis for that, that she doesn't show up, and maybe you wouldn't have to continue the trial. You could get it done the next week. She doesn't show up. Now you've got that evidence. So now you've done the nth degree, but it's really the very first direct evidence of the hunch being confirmed. And yet that's the very basis for the termination. So why would that not be reasonable to let's do all we can to see if we can assist her in treating that chronic chemical dependency?
So postponing the trial and prolonging the case would not have been reasonable under the circumstances. The department had been trying to work with appellant for 26 months at that point. She had been given ample time to recognize, comply with drug testing, recognize her problem, say, admit she has a problem, and willingly engage in treatment. She had all of those opportunities for 26 months. And at the time of trial, this child had been in out-of-home placement for 17 months, which was 60% of the child's life. Prolonging the case to allow mother to try to engage in treatment when she had been resistant and refused any other services for 26 months would not have been reasonable. And I think, again, this all comes back to prejudice on appeal. She has to demonstrate prejudice, that if the department had made this referral, she would have, there's so many assumptions, she would have attended the assessment and completed it. The assessment would have recommended chemical dependency treatment even in the absence of admission or positive UAs. And then that she would have successfully engaged with the months and months of chemical dependency treatment that would have been required for her to remedy her issues. She would have earnestly engaged in this, successfully completed it, and then demonstrated sobriety for a long enough period of time to justify the return of the child.
Counsel,
based on her history and...
One more question for you. How is your position consistent with the case law that has found that simply testing for substance use without more is not realistic to under the circumstances to rehabilitate a parent?
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe that is referring to the TR case.
Yes.
And
correct.
That is factually distinguishable for a wide variety of reasons and supports my argument that chemical dependency treatment is only reasonable if the parent admits use and or has positive UAs.
Assessment. Chemical dependency assessment.
Yes. So in TR, in that case, the parent admitted to substance use, submitted multiple positive UAs, and had completed 3 chemical dependency evaluations. And with all of those constellation of facts, the department still failed to refer the parent for treatment. That is drastically different than this case. In the TR case, there was the parent admitting it, asking for help, and providing positive UAs. Under that circumstance, of course, it would have been reasonable and required to refer that parent for treatment.
And got an assessment.
Yes, but 3 assessments that recommended treatment based on the parent admitting use and having positive UAs. Whereas if you look at the cases I cite in my brief that subsequently distinguished TR, CLH, and AD, in those cases, they address the fact that the department's efforts were reasonable even though there was no chemical dependency treatment because the parent failed to comply with the threshold step, which was demonstrating sobriety. And that is precise language from the CLA case, 2018 Westlaw 659-6296. And I see that my time is up.
But I have one question. My recollection of those cases is they have to do with treatment and not assessment. And I think the issue that's being presented here, correct me if I'm wrong, if those are assessment cases. The issue that's being presented here is if you're going to terminate her parental rights based on chronic substance abuse, whether you at a minimum have an obligation to order an assessment to evaluate that chronic substance abuse.
So in the CLH case, the case plan approved in that case was similar to this case where it said a Rule 25 if positive UAs. And so in that case, they found that his decision to rebuff the county's repeated attempts to facilitate his first step, demonstrating sobriety, undermined the county's reasonable efforts to correct the child's lack of a safe and sober home. So I do feel that that case is very factually similar to this case and on point.
Thank you.
Can I ask one follow-up?
Yes.
From my experience on the district court bench testimony, part of the purpose of the assessment includes collateral contacts, which part of the reason for the collateral contacts is to see whether the interviewee is being honest about their use or lack thereof. And so I'm still trying to get my arms around why a hunch, and well-founded hunch in this case, as we now see from the findings, it wasn't just an off the wall. Why isn't that enough for an assessment to be done And the assessment will explain. The assessors are pretty good at knowing if someone's really denying and then has other tangible evidence and records and et cetera that show that this seems like underestimating her use. Is that no longer the case? In other words, no one can get an assessment as long as they say, no, I don't use, then they don't qualify for a Rule 25?
If they say, no, I don't use, and there's no documentation to say otherwise,
so
I believe that is correct.
So if a court orders it, though, let's assume you had it in the plan, a court orders that. We've got all this record, we got this history that led to your hunch, which, again, is well-founded. The court orders an assessment. I assume an assessment will occur then in that case.
If the court had ordered the assessment just out of the gate regardless, the department would have, in order to comply with court orders, made the referral. Right. But that assessment still very likely would not have recommended any treatment because the perspective of the department is vastly different than the perspective of a chemical dependency professional who's making an assessment saying, is this parent currently in need of chemical dependency treatment because they're currently using? And so if they had the department's collateral, the department would have been able to give them accurate information about her extensive child protection history dating back to the 2000s, her extensive periods of use, the prenatal exposure with the child. But if that assessment was then done, you know, a year after the child is removed and the assessor asks the department, so do you have UAs that to prove that she's currently using, the department would have shown up empty-handed because of the appellant's conduct in refusing to comply with any type of substance use testing.
Well, wouldn't you have had, we have presumed positive tests because she didn't show up? I mean, legally, you would have said, we have presumed positive drug tests.
Which would have been misleading to the assessor to say, we have tests that are presumed positive. The department would have to say that she has missed all of her drug testing, which the department presumes are positive. But again, we don't have any documentation to hand to a chemical dependency assessor to say, look, despite her denial, we have proof that she is currently using.
Any other questions? No. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Appellant, you will have 5 minutes for a rebuttal. And it would be helpful to me if you would respond to respondent's argument regarding prejudice.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. As far as the prejudice piece goes, I think that, there is prejudice here. What it boils down to is we cannot know how the outcome would have been different without that assessment. The department was required to make a referral for that assessment, and we simply don't know how it might have been different with that additional collateral. I'd also note that there is nothing in the record speaking to that. We don't have evidence. We didn't have a chemical assessor come and testify and say, well, we couldn't have recommended treatment. We couldn't have done that without this information. We could not have made a referral for treatment without UAs. We don't have that information in the record. So it is speculative at best that the outcome would have been exactly the same. Respondent also argues that there's no prejudice because mother probably just wouldn't have shown up to the assessment anyway. I don't know if we can say that based on the record. Respondent relies on the mental health assessment, which is distinct and separate from the central issue of the case here, which was the chemical dependency. Mother sought out her own chemical dependency assessment that the county was going to rely on, but then ultimately didn't. So I don't know that we can say that mother would not have completed that assessment or taken other steps necessary simply because she did not comply with the UAs. There is nothing in the record suggesting that otherwise.
Is there any case law that would suggest that that the county is absolved of providing a service that they don't think the parent will actually use?
That is essentially in TR as well, the futility finding. Simply because the county believes that the parent is not going to comply with it does not mean that they don't need to offer it in order to attempt to provide those reasonable efforts to remedy the issues that brought the case into court. In this case, they did not do that. And again, that is another of the issues in the TR case, talking about that futility finding. Had the county believed that nothing else would have made a difference, they needed to bring that futility motion, and they didn't. The court did not make a finding of futility. They were required to continue to make those reasonable efforts up until the point that there was either a termination or the court said you don't need to provide reasonable efforts anymore. Also on the point of the positive UA.
Just going back to the case law.
Sure.
Can you address the CLH case and respondent's argument regarding that case?
Yes, Your Honor. That, I would note, is a non-precedential case. I do believe it's different. It's a little bit unclear, at least in my reading of that case, whether they are talking about an assessment, and now I can't quite recall, but it was also tied to the other efforts and the other services that the county was offering. I believe in that case, the court basically said, well, you couldn't proceed with any of your other requirements on the case plan because you didn't do any of this testing, and we couldn't get anywhere with that. That is slightly different than the case here because it was focused primarily on that issue of the chemical dependency, which is the ultimate reason for the termination in this case. And so I do believe that they are distinguishable.
Counsel, can you refresh my memory on the private assessment she did do? What was the recommendation, and did she present evidence that she complied with that recommendation?
I believe the recommendation was that she comply with child protection, that if there was a positive chemical dependency test, that she do another evaluation. I don't believe she presented any evidence that she did that. But again, it's not the mother's burden here to prove that she is a fit parent or that she complied with or
but
that
doesn't that tie
the county
into the prejudice prong, though, because it kind of essentially says that what the county did was reasonable because that was the assessment she's now arguing should have been done, but she did an assessment, and it sounds like it answered it the same way the plan did, only if there's a positive UA, then consider treatment.
Yeah, and I would note that by the county's own argument that the outcome of the assessment could have been different. They argue that in their brief. They provide a whole list of information that mother failed to provide that could have arguably provided a different outcome in that assessment. But we simply don't know, based on this record, how it would have been different. The county needed to provide that effort to mother, and they didn't. And for that reason, we ask this court to reverse the termination of parental rights. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. This case has been submitted, and we will issue an opinion in this matter in the time prescribed by statute.